We just mentioned the phone lines that are available to you and will be available to you over the course of this next hour. Your questions and comments for Ambassador Lee Wanta, the $31.2 trillion man. Lon Gibby also stays with us. He wrote the foreword to Lee's biography, Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, and Lon is the producer of a new documentary film that should be available soon to filmgoers, and it's called Eagle One to Wanta. Just a heads up that I will be back in the air chair Sunday night into Monday morning, and I will welcome author, politician Lance Simmons. He's published about 180 articles in the Huffington Post, but his most recent article, which is titled Why Our Children Should Hate Us, was about the documentary Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe. And in the article, he applauds the documentary Vaxxed, of course, detailing, among other things, Dr. Andrew Wakefield's work in finding some sort of a relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism. And it was originally supposed to screen at the Tribeca Film Festival, but Robert De Niro, I guess the curator, organizer of that film festival, who has an autistic son, sort of, I guess, bowed to public pressure and dropped the film from the documentary lineup, but then later came out and regretted it. Anyway, here's where it gets interesting. Lance Simmons' article was also dropped from the Huffington Post, so he'll be along to talk about that. And then in the second half of the show, Dr. Elena Gabor, a specialist in subconscious science and a researcher into non-ordinary states of consciousness, including past lives, she will conduct a past life regression live on the program. That's right. She's going to perform, along with a regression subject, obviously. They'll perform a past life regression live on Coast to Coast AM. So hope you'll be along for that. All right, questions, comments, get them ready. We're going to let you have at Lee Wanta and Lon Gibby when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you, and we have opened up the phone lines, and we'll take your questions, comments for Lee Wanta, the $31.2 trillion man, and also producer Lon Gibby is with us as well, the documentary Eagle One to Wanta. Before we take calls, Lon, tell us how, again, we can see the trailer, and then when can we expect to see the film?
You bet. You can see the trailer if you go to Eagle One to Wanta. It's just spelled out, .com. And also the book, the biography is available, I should mention, is on Amazon, Apple, and also Barnes & Noble. And you can pick that up. And it has all the all the documents that back up. There's hundreds of documents that back up the book. And you can just click and get those.
Okay, so the biography is called Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat.
That's correct.
Okay. And when can we see the documentary?
We'll be out, our goal is to have it out, you know, before the election. We've been working hard, and so it's going to be towards the end of the summer. It should be ready to roll.
All right. So you have a distributor. We'll be able to see it at film festivals. How?
Well, we're going to put it in some film festivals right off the bat, and we hope that we'd like to make it available in a theatrical format. But we have talked to the HBO has asked to take a look at the project and a little bit, and I'm preparing some information for them, and we'll see. It may be that one of the major networks will pick it up, and that would be ideal. The more people that could see it, the better. It's going to be very important for people to understand a lot of the truths that we've been able to pull together.
All right, and I was being sincere. If Donald J. Trump is out there listening, we would invite him. I was going to open a special line, but our call screener Donna said, "Well, just have him use the wild card line," which is most apt. Or he could be he's a first. I'm sure he'd be a first time caller. So, Donald, if you're listening, we'd love to get your take on Lee Wanta. Lee, I got to ask you this. I just received a tweet. I received a tweet from someone named Jason. Who says Lee Wanta is delusional? So many debunking of his claims. He was no ambassador. Explain how it is that you were an ambassador, Lee.
Okay, let me go back. But the U.S. Supreme Court already confirmed I am an ambassador. Juan's got a copy of the filing. I'm an ambassador because we're going to build a U.S. Naval Supply Depot in Mogadishu and also take over their air base and put our U.S. Air Force there. Benghazi would never have happened, I'm sure of that.
And all right,
I
so
was
you...
the ambassador so we can keep an eye on the funding. Besides, I was in Canada with Dan Quayle in a safe house is when Somalia was having trouble with Canada, as Canada was guarding their food under Operation Restore Hope. That's how I got involved.
Sorry, just to clarify, Lee, you were named U.S. ambassador to Somalia,
Somalian ambassador, not the United States. First of all, the United States is not even a country anymore. We lost that a long time ago. It was a Somalian ambassador, 04362-12535 are the diplomatic numbers, and it was confirmed in the U.S. Supreme Court. All those filings are waived. See, everybody thinks it's got to be only ambassador of the United States. We're all Americans. We can serve other things, but we wanted a naval supply depot in Mogadishu because Cuba was coming in there. And Somalia was the Italians. And so we took over there.
You know, the book addresses that really well because that's been a plant that a lot of people try to discredit Lee and by saying, oh, he's just made that up. But read the book, look at the documents, and remember the Supreme Court wouldn't put his name as an ambassador on their Supreme Court document. If you go to Twitter, EO1TWANTA, you'll see a picture of Lee in front of that document.
Three federal judges. How many judges have to rule that I'm an ambassador?
All right.
So, anyway, that's a pretty common question that comes up because mainly.
Okay. Well, if Jason's listening, who sent that tweet, I hope that puts that to rest. Let's go to the wild card line, and David is in Phelan, California. David, welcome to Coast. Good morning, David. Let's get David in here from Phelan, California. Are you there, David?
Sure, I'm here.
All right. Go ahead. Your question for Lee Wanta.
I am a Marine. A retired Marine calling out of Phelan. I'm a first-time home buyer. I bought my house about a year ago. Given the current events of Donald Trump, what will happen to the American dream? What will happen to American veterans coming up? You know, we have Memorial Day coming up. I want to know what your guest thinks about that and pretty much what will happen to the American dream if Donald Trump wins.
Well, all right, Lee.
If Donald Trump won, everybody would be able to tell him to get every single veteran ID card, as the Veterans Administration would not. First of all, the Veterans Administration should go back to the Department of Defense, not a political machine. And if you have a veteran ID card, you can go to your local hospital. Once the Veterans Administration can't take you, you're entitled to full medical care. Go to your nearest hospital or your personal doctor and get your care. You fought for this country, the only country we got.
All right, David, thank you for that. Now, Trump is taking a lot of heat because they're saying, well, he's not really a conservative because he's not talking about cutting back on entitlements, social entitlements like Medicare, like Social Security. Are you saying that if you...
It's not an entitlement, sir. Everybody, I don't know how old you are, Richard, but when I was young, that was a big deal. You're paying into that like a savings account. That's not an entitlement.
Thank you for the clarification. But nonetheless, he's taking heat because he's not willing to touch those programs. You're saying that he wouldn't need to if you repatriated this money. There'd be more than enough money for all of these programs.
That is correct. And plus, I would have been doing other financial work and paid more taxes into that fund. And then I'm not going to retire because I get paid. I guess a lot of programs I want to do is going to generate a lot of money and 2 million jobs. I'm ready to hire 2 million people the moment we can start the high-speed rail. And that's not counting all of the metal and the steel and the wiring and the cable and the cement. Lon's got a picture of how they assemble those tracks. That's on the Twitter. It's a beautiful setup. We can get through the mountains and get here or there. And they're talking about an underground train. I was on the Milwaukee Road when I was a kid and taking my kids to Wisconsin, down from Milwaukee. And you can look, it was a scenic on the roof, you can look out at the stars and the mountains and the trees and the farms. Why do we have to go underground? That doesn't make any sense. I'll be old and gone now. It'll take 50 years to go underground. In fact, London talked to me about a year ago, wanted me to fund an underground train from London to Heathrow, and they were halfway through grinding and digging the tunnels, and they came over a burial site with the Black Plague, and they ended that project immediately because nobody knows the Black Plague better than they do.
Yeah, I don't know what it costs down in the United States, but I know for the subway here in Toronto, tunneling underground is about $1 billion per kilometer, so it's very expensive. What's the price tag for your...
You don't need it.
What would be the price tag for your high-speed rail system across the United States? What would be the price tag?
$850 billion. Now I think it's 1.3, only because of inflation.
$1.3 trillion.
Yeah, I wanted to pay it. I didn't expect to make any money. I was looking for a lousy clubhouse sandwich and a club car for the Chicago 2016 Olympics. That's a fact, Jack.
All right.
I like to say that.
Wild card line, Wilford is in Winnipeg. Winnipeg, like go ahead.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah, Mr. Sarah, yeah, thank you. And thank you, Ambassador Wanta. I was just curious about your philanthropist programs. Would you consider ever funding a perpetual energy device or interstellar drive device?
Lon's on the phone with us. He's our communications director as well, and he's been talking to some people that are involved in that.
Yeah, there's a lot of really interesting technologies that haven't had an opportunity to get funded. And
is there a place where you can apply through?
Well, not at this time, but there will be as soon as these issues are resolved. That we've discussed.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
And there will be an opportunity for new entrepreneurs. People.
Would it be on your website?
It'll be on the Eagle One to Wanta website. If you keep an eye on that, you'll see some new news.
I'll do that then. Thank you both.
Recently about Lee's plans to help with the student loan issue in our country, which is gotten to be a serious problem.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I received an email earlier today, someone anticipating Lee coming on the program and wanted to ask about that very issue, student loans. I mean, that's a huge debt bubble ready to burst.
Maximum $1 trillion to start.
You would dedicate $1 trillion to relieve student debt.
I already hired the accounting firm and the law firm, and the nice thing about doing it now, if I get paid tomorrow, is we have a lot of IRS agents and people that used to do the taxes. They can do that on the student loan forgiveness program because they have ways to verify it. Because the big thing we want to do is not write out a check and they don't pay the university where they owe the money or the banks. The banks have been ripping them off on the student loans for years and years, and that's not fair.
Okay, back to the wild card line.
He's been paying us on a student loan for 25 years. Give me a break.
All right, Wayne is in Chicago, Illinois, in the wild card line. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Yes, good morning, Richard, and good morning. His name is Gibby, and good morning, Mr. Wanta.
Yes,
I would just like to say to you that not only are you a good-hearted man, you are a brave heart. Just like the guest that they had on last night, I think his name was Greer, I think his name was. Men like you all are honorable, honest men. And that is what we need, not only in the United States, but in the world. I give you all the credit in the world, sir. I think you are absolutely fantastic individual. You are a brave man. With all due respect to Robert De Niro, the currency is courage. The longer you live, you begin to understand that the true currency is courage. And Robert just went out. He could have did a lot of good exposing those vaccinations. But anyway, sir, Mr. Wants, I would like to ask you, how can we get this information out when the media is completely bought off and the Coast to Coast family knows about this, but the United States people need to know about this? So do you think there's any kind of way we could get this information out to the people to let them know exactly what's going on $31.2 trillion to solve the problems of the whole United States. And again,
right, that's minimal.
For your
and that's why.
Thank you very much. I'll take
Ron Gibby was on the phone here with us because I needed his expertise to tell the news media, shape up or ship out. Because there's a lot of CIA agents that every major newspaper and TV, they follow a script. That's not the way to run a country.
Well, I've got
we're trying really hard to get that out there, and really appreciate your wanting to help any way you can. The website has content available now, and of course, Twitter. We're using social media, but we believe that the news media, the free press isn't free right now, unfortunately. But we do have a vision that can change fairly quickly, because there are some good people in the media that are aware of the situation, and I think a major story will break it soon on one of the major networks.
Oh, that's interesting. You're anticipating a major story on this issue breaking soon.
I believe.
Oh, yeah, we talked to them a lot, but they're all afraid to step forward. They'll talk, they'll listen.
You know, you got to figure this is like the Klondike. And by the way, chapter 17 is the last chapter in the book that we asked me to help on summarize kind of what's happened up to this point. But we live in a time that's like the Klondike, basically. Everybody's going up for the gold. And, of course, the news media they benefit regardless of the party. So they get paid, the more contention, the better. And that's not good for America. You know, we need to get the truth out. It's not about just creating more contention so they can controlling the media. So anyway, we just need everybody's help to keep complaining, obviously, right into those stations and get in their face. But things need to change. We need a free press back.
All right, Wayne in Chicago, thank you for that. Now, Lee, I'm
we
not
also
being...
We have the book now, 530 pages with the disc. It's a wealth of knowledge. It's like a Bible of corruption.
All right. Now, when it comes to the mainstream media, and I'm not being flippant or facetious here, I'm being serious. Why couldn't you execute one of your currency swaps or some other financial dealing that you're so good at, and then buy Viacom out from under them?
We were negotiating with a couple of newspapers. We still have our list. One told us to drop dead because they would get hurt. Who's going to hurt them? We don't know. But we wanted to do that because they all have a license to publish. And they guard the same as a lot of those TV programs. They're afraid to step forward because they would be unemployed.
No, I'm saying, what if you were to buy them? Buy the newspaper, buy the radio station.
People are ready.
You know, that's interesting to bring that up because the whole lease, if he doesn't buy one and change it to where it should be, he'll create it. I believe we could create a free press, a new media that really does report truth.
All right, we're coming up on a break here, and we'll take more calls and questions after that break. This is wow, hard to imagine how life would change in America if the U.S. Treasury coffers had $31.2 trillion. Well, the money's there. Just needs to be redirected where it can do the most good. Imagine erasing the U.S. debt overnight, funding huge trillion-dollar infrastructure programs. How many people could you put to work immediately? Sounds like the salve for most of America's problems. And the man who has the answers is right here on Coast to Coast AM. Lee Wanta, along with Lon Gibby. We will get back to our discussion with Ambassador Lee Wanta and Lon Gibby. The book is Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, and the documentary, soon to be released, is Eagle One to Wanta. Let me crib here from near the end of Chapter 6. These are the words of Lee Wanta. The laws of God are not restrictions on human liberty. Let me back up here. At the base of Lee Wanta's philosophy is the concept that truth makes you free. He has clearly said that the more people understand the laws of God, the freer people are to enjoy life. The laws of God are not restrictions on human liberty. God could have given us a world in which his creations, human beings, were unable to make bad choices. He didn't. He gave us real choice. Why? Because I believe he rejoices when people choose good over evil, when people think positive rather than negative thoughts, when they obey his laws of nature. Lee Emile Wanta holds the victory of good over evil proven by the resurrection of Christ close to his heart. He believes we, the people, can, with the right attitude, defeat those who would steal our American freedom. He defines the right attitude as lawful solutions that support the Constitution of our great nation, America. Back with more of my conversation with Lee Wanta and your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett with you from Coast Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Ambassador Lee Wanta on the line from Parts Unknown, and Lon Gibby, producer of the documentary film Eagle One to Wanta. You can see the trailer at eagle1towanta.com, and you can also order the biography there called Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat. Lee, you're 76 years old. What happens if you were to pass before that money's reverted back to you? What happens to the $31
trillion? Well, I imagine it still has to go to my family estate. I have three kids and five grandkids, and it has to go to them in probate because they already know it's there. They already confirmed the money that the Treasury and the chief counsel of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond testified for Judge Ellis that the funds were Henry Paulson. He's not my boss. How can he take that money? He used it for the bailout money, the TARP money. And the bankers ripped us off, never paid us back. They paid a little bit, big deal. And they were getting treasury bills. They were borrowing like money at 2.5% and buying treasury bills that never went out to the public. You know, I offered to buy a lot of those corporations that were in trouble. All they did was sneak around and the regulators let them go. It's all, to me, it's criminal. You can't
all right,
rob
let's go to the...
and then get away from everything. Well, okay, I'll pay you the money back in installments, like $10 million every year or something. It's still a crime under RICO, if nothing else. Criminal activities in the United States is running rampant. The puppet masters and RICO will stop all that. In fact, I found a charge against the state of Wisconsin for kidnapping me in Switzerland, and I didn't even live in Wisconsin since 1985. I spent the whole year of 1985 in China, 86 with preventing the coup in the Philippines. I haven't lived in Wisconsin since 1985. My wife and I were separated.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the wild card line. William is in Madison, Wisconsin. William, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Great show. I'd like to explain how the RICO Act got started. But let me explain that when I was young, writing my doctorate in chemistry, biochemistry, and I was living at 1426 West Lexington, Little Italy, in Chicago. My landlady was Miss Piratilli, that's not her real name, not the back window. She'd show me how organized crime bosses and their trucks were moving goods from back and forth. And she'd point out, Arcado, there's Tony, there's so-and-so. She knew them all. Anyway, I left there, went up to Wausau. And I started to run for Congress because I realized that organized crime was taking over America. At that time, there was a New York reporter, very courageous, Victor Rizal. And coming out of his office, he'd been writing articles about how organized crime was controlling about 22% of America's legitimate business and increasing its share control of business by 2 to 3% a year. I got on television, Wausau, Stevens Point. This nice fellow was 12 years old when I was on TV, and at Duluth in Minneapolis speaking about this. My landlord in Wausau said, "Will, watch your back. There's a car across the street every night. There's two or three men in a black car." And I knew that I was taking a risk. I slept in hay fields. And then the RICO Act, I started speaking on that, and that's how the RICO Act got started. I believe I spearheaded that back in 67. And then a year later, Melvin Laird became Secretary of Defense under Nixon. And You know, some people say, Will, you ought to write a book about your life. I was in Russia. I was put in jail over there for 3 months. They thought I was a secret agent. All I did was try to get Finland free of Russia. I finally succeeded at that. After that, then the Baltic countries got free, Poland and East Germany. And
all right, William, you write that book, and we'll get you on the show. You sound like you've led a fascinating life. Do you have a question for Lee Wanta?
Yes. Let me ask him. How would I put it? He talks about the puppets. Aren't you willing to agree that the big gangsters are the puppets and others that work in collusion with them run not only America, but the world?
Correct. That's why you have the New World Order, which is not a good deal. And by the way, I was born in Stevens Point, and there's a lot of Wantas in Warsaw.
All right. If I could get you to move a little closer to the phone, Lee. All right.
Any closer, I won't be able to eat your table.
All right.
I'll finish you.
No, he's absolutely right. The Rico statutes, if they were enforced, the crimes would diminish by at least 80%. I'm serious. Organized crime does not help the American people.
All right. Let's go east of the Rockies. And is it Micah in Knoxville, Tennessee?
How you guys doing today?
Very well, Micah. Go ahead.
Good. I want to say, to start off, like, when I was first calling in, I wanted to say that I was going to disagree with this guy, like, on everything he was saying, because he was still using the term Soviet Union. And we obviously know there's no Soviet Union today. But since then, he has kind of hit on several topics, especially after the gentleman that was a Marine called in, and he told him that if Donald Trump, you know, gained presidency, that they would see a change and an uptick in a positive way on the treatment of vets. I'm a vet. I was an 82nd Airborne guy. I trained with Marines. We did great things together. I loved every second of the time that I served my country. But he also was talking about, like, trying to get the right politicians into office. This is the wrong thing to think of. It's getting the right people into office. When we keep reelecting these politicians to do these political things, all they're doing is doing things in their interest. They're not doing things in anybody that surrounds their interests. That's why I miss the days, which I wasn't even alive for, to where military commanders actually assumed office at certain points. And for him to say that we need to get these right political figures into office, no, what we need to do is set term limits on Congress to where these people cannot become career politicians, get people, ordinary people, comfortable running in their communities and getting city council seats and local state representative seats and state senate seats and work their way up to the national level to where they're actually working in the interest of these people. Because if not, everything is worthless, because these guys care nothing about anything. So Donald Trump, as much as he might look like a buffoon and act like anything else, you know what? I majored in technical communications, and what we were supposed to do to level with everybody is speak on an eighth grade level. And he is doing that far better than anybody else. And he doesn't go up there like he's full of BS. When you look at Hillary Clinton, full of BS. When you look at Bernie Sanders, full of BS. They preach a lot of things that are just not even possible. If we could all live in a utopia, oh my God, would that be great? Yes. I think all of us could agree we would like to live there. The Republicans, Democrats, Independents, whoever you are, we would love to live there. The fact of the matter is that's not going to happen. And it's definitely not going to happen if we keep letting politicians make the decisions instead of letting the people.
All right.
Make the decisions. So I would say to you, this is my question, how do we make that switch? How do we get people actually educated to the point to where they stop voting for these people that know how to go out there and just, you know, put out phrases and this and that and get people to vote for them. And actually, let's vote for some people that are people. The people that, like me and you, we're having this conversation right now.
Okay. Micah, first of all, thank you for your service. And we're just kind of scrambling here to get Lee and Lon Gibby back on the line. And I'm guessing, I don't want to put words in Lee's mouth. Lee is back. Okay. So, yep. Lee, are you there?
I'm here. What was his question?
He said, okay, he wants to know, how do we get the right people, not politicians, how do we get the right people elected at the local, state, national level?
Well, first of all, you have to show that the states are really an independent state and not part of the corporate law crap. And then you have to go back to the mayor, you have to go back to the judges, the DA, and also the commissions at your capital in the courts, because a lot of judges are not real judges. They don't have the documentation to be a judge. You have to start step by step in the community levels. That's a big job, because they're so entrenched. A lot of these people are under the bar. The bar is part of the British Empire, and the Constitution says you cannot be publicly elected as an attorney. So you can remove a lot of that nonsense. That's why they call themselves esquires. They think they're some kind of king and queen.
All right.
Start at the grassroots.
That's indeed.
13 states now are planning to secede from the union. And that would change a lot.
The main thing, but also, you know, it's important for people to be willing to stand up, you know, and let their voice be heard. So many people are just so quiet, you know, they just stay home and wring their hands and complain. But, you know, good people need to stand up and run for office. There's a lot of really good people out there that would do a terrific job, and they just need to be willing to do it. Go for it.
All right. Well, I think, you know, if nothing else, what Trump has done, Trump the disruptor, as David Stockman has called him, he has sort of laid bare the whole notion that, you know, politicians can actually get anything done. As he likes to say, they're all talk, no action. And
right,
he has
controlled by the lobbyists.
Right, and Trump has spoken to that as well. And so I think what he has fomented is a real sea change in the attitude of the American voter, where they don't want anything that even smells remotely of establishment anymore. I think,
correct. Absolutely correct.
I think those days are over, hopefully. All right,
and
let's go to the
control.
Yeah, but first, he who counts the votes decides who wins. Remember that. We have computerized voting machines now, and you know who runs those machines, and by a switch of a telephone call, those numbers can change. We don't have the old paper ballots from when my dad voted in the 40s. I would watch them. They all had paper ballots, and they were all counted in their little shack in Sheboygan.
True enough, that is problematic. Yes, these electronic voting machines are problematic, no question. First-time caller Jason is in Appleton, Wisconsin. Jason, welcome to Coast AM. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're well, thank you. Go ahead.
Good, Nick.
Okay.
I want to go to Silent Bakery in Appleton.
Okay. What's that, Lee?
Yeah, quick two comments. Number one, I do believe during that time the ruble was non-convertible. And number two, and no offense to Mr. Watts, I mean, nobody can say one way or another in this story, but the semantics and vernacular used by Mr. Watts, it seems very strange to me that he would have been sashayed around the world dealing with high finance. And those are my two comments.
Okay, first of all, I was promising, and the ruble benchmark was $1.20. And if the people in Russia or the Soviet Union couldn't buy anything with it, they were going to Humphrey, to Warsaw, to give whatever they could, even a refrigerator. The ruble had no, it wasn't convertible outside of the Soviet Union. That was their demise. They had no strength, no power to buy anything.
But I think his question was, or Jason, I think Jason's point was, if it was a non-convertible currency at that time, how did you engage in the currency swap?
Because we had agreements with the central bank. They wrote articles and pictures of me and the powers to be at the central bank and I became co-owner of Rush, R-U-S-S. Soviet Union was a failed country. Nobody would take their currency. And we found ways to take the currency and rebuild their Russian Federation from the Soviet Union. It's all in the book, and you can also read Thieves World that says the same thing, how we diminished the profitability of the bankers and went to the industrial places where the rubles started getting jobs. People didn't have this, didn't have that, didn't have this. And once the rubles were traded with hard currency and the Deutschmark or the shilling or the British pound sterling, China lira, Spanish pesetas, they had something of value. Other than that, it was a piece of toilet paper.
All right, I'm going to try and squeeze one more call in quickly. On the wild card line, CJ is in Portland, Oregon. CJ, welcome to Coast. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Richard? Long time no chat. Welcome down here from Strange Planet Productions.
Hi, CJ. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, you too, sir. Hey, you guys, I feel really privileged. If I would have known I was going to get through the line, I would have bought a lottery ticket today. yeah, my sister's going to freak because she was has been recently enlightening me as to Mr. Wanta and his associates. This is just incredible. And I think when I first called the screener, Richard, some of my questions, I think you guys kind of already nailed them. But if you don't mind me asking, are you folks familiar with a gentleman by the name of Trevor Loudon? And for example, he wrote the book, The Enemies Within. Because I think if Trevor and Mr. Wanta ever got together, they'd be unstoppable. But
Trevor Loudon. Okay. We've just got about 30 seconds here. So, CJ, did you have another question?
Yeah. I guess I don't feel able to answer it. But, I mean, how was that? I'm ignorant to the economy, but was that money actual? Was that actual money currency? Or was that digital currency? You know, what form of money was that in?
Digital, we didn't use. We promised software, but we had real currency because we had Brinks in Holland count every single 5, 1, 20, 50 rubles. In fact, big barrels, culls.
Okay. I got to jump in here, Lee. Apologies. Sorry for the interruption. We got to wrap this up and say goodnight. I want to thank Lon Gibby, Lee Wanta, the book again, Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, the documentary, Eagle One to Wanta, the website, eagle1towanta.com. Thank you so much, gentlemen. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Greg Bishop, Nathan Staten and Donna Walker, and here in Toronto, Scotty Guest, Nathan Smith and Michael Stringer, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, take care.